तब वृंदावन जाहो लोक सिखाइते सहित करिबे तुमार जय लय चित्ते तब वृंदावन जाह लोक सिखाइते सहित करिबे तुमार जय लय चित्ते। तब वृंदावन जहाँ लोक सिखाइते সহিত করিবে তোমার যেই লয় চিত্তে। তব বৃন্দাবন যাহা লোক শিখাইতে সহিত করিবে তোমার যেই লয় চিত্তে। तब वृंदावन जहाँ लोक सिखाइते सहित करिबे तुमार जे लय चित्ते। लेडीज तब वृंदावन जहाँ लोक सिखाइते सहित करिबे Shite.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. So before we read the translation and purport, today is a topical class on one of the five most potent forms of devotional service. And today we're covering the item called Mathura Vas, or residing in the land of Mathura. Or Vrindavan. And these five most potent aspects of devotional service are such, Rupa Goswami says, that even if one develops a little attachment toward performing one of these five, it can cause the rise of ecstatic devotion even in a neophyte. And this is why they're considered the most potent forms of devotional service. Deity, devotee, Nam, Dham, and Bhagavatam. These five together comprise them. And today we're doing the dham, or the holy place. So therefore, we selected a verse here in related to that. The purport is a little long, but Prabhupada covers many wonderful points here regarding Vrindavan Dham. So I encourage you to listen attentively, despite the fact that it's a couple pages. Although wherever you stay is Vrindavan, this is Gadadhar Pandit speaking. Although wherever you stay is Vrindavan, you still go to Vrindavan just to instruct people. Otherwise, you do whatever you think best. Okay. Please repeat. Although wherever you stay is Vrindavan, you still go to Vrindavan just to instruct people. Otherwise, you do whatever you think best. Purport. It was not essential for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to go to Vrindavan, for wherever he stayed was immediately converted to Vrindavan. Indeed, there was also the river Ganges, the river Yamuna, and all other places of pilgrimage. This was also expressed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself when he danced in the Rath Yatra. At that time, he said that his very mind was Vrindavan, Moramon Vrindavan. Because his mind was Vrindavan, all the pastimes of Radha and Krishna were taking place within himself. Nonetheless, just to teach people, he visited Bhoma Vrindavan, Vrindavan Dham in this material world. In this way, the Lord instructed everyone to visit Vrindavan Dham, which is a very holy place. Materialists consider Vrindavan Dham an unclean city because there are many monkeys and dogs there, and along the bank of the Yamuna there is refuse. Some time ago, a materialistic man asked me, "Why are you living in Vrindavan? Why have you selected such a dirty place to live after retiring?" Such a person cannot understand that Vrindavan Dham is always the representation of the original Vrindavan Dham. Consequently, Vrindavan Dham is as worshipable as Lord Krishna. Aradhyo Bhagavan Brajesha Tanayas Tadhama Vrindavanam. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, Lord Sri Krishna and his abode Vrindavan are equally worshipable. Sometimes materialistic people who have no spiritual understanding go to Vrindavan as tourists. One who goes to Vrindavan with such materialistic vision cannot derive any spiritual benefit. Such a person is not convinced that Krishna and Vrindavan are identical. Since they are identical, Vrindavan is as worshipable as Lord Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's vision, Mor Man Vrindavan, is different from the vision of an ordinarily materialistic person. At the Rath Yatra festival, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, absorbed in the ecstasy of Srimati Radharani, dragged Lord Krishna back to Vrindavan Dham. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke of this in the verses beginning Ahush Chate in the Madhya Lila. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Yasyatma buddhi kunapetri dhatuke swadhi kalatradi shubhoma ijjadhi yatirta buddhi salilena karhichit janeshvabhiknyeshu saeva gokhara. A human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth as worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath, rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally renovated Vrindavan Dham and advised his chief disciples, Rupa and Sanatan, to develop it and open it to attract the spiritual vision of the general populace. At present, there are about 5,000 temples in Vrindavan, and still our society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is constructing a huge, magnificent temple for the worship of Lord Balaram, Radha Krishna, and Guru Gauranga. Since there is no prominent Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, we are attempting to construct one so that people will be attracted to Krishna Balaram or Nitai Gaurachandra. Brajendra Nandana Jay Shachi Shutta Hoiloshe. Narottam Das Thakur says that Balaram and the son of Maharaj Nanda have advented themselves as Gaur Nitai. To propagate this fundamental principle, we are establishing a Krishna Balaram temple to broadcast to the world that the worship of Gaur Nitai is the same as the worship of Krishna Balaram. Although it is very difficult to enter into the Radha Krishna pastimes, most of the devotees of Vrindavan are attracted to the Radha Krishna Leela. However, since Nitai Gaurachandra are direct incarnations of Balaram and Krishna, we can be directly in touch with Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu. Those who are highly elevated in Krishna consciousness can enter into the pastimes of Radha Krishna through the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is said, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahe Anna. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a combination of Radha and Krishna. Sometimes materialists, forgetting the pastimes of Radha Krishna and Krishna Balaram, go to Vrindavan, accept the land's spiritual facilities, and engage in material activity. This is against the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Prakrita Sahajiyas proclaim themselves Vrajavasis or Dhamavasi, but they are mainly engaged in sense gratification. Thus they become more and more implicated in the materialistic way of life. Those who are pure devotees in Krishna consciousness condemn their activities. The eternal Vrajavasis like Swarup Damodar did not even come to Vrindavan Dham. Sri Pundarika Vidyanidhi, Sri Haridas Thakur, Srivas Pandit, Shivananda Sen, Sri Ramananda Rai, Sri Shikhi Mahiti, Sri Madhavi Devi, and Sri Gadadhar Pandit Goswami never visited Vrindavan Dham. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out that we have no authorized documents stating that these exalted personalities visited Vrindavan. Nonetheless, we find many non-devotees, Mayavadi sannyasis, Prakrita Sahajiyas, fruitive workers, mental speculators, and many others with material motives going to Vrindavan to live. Many of these people go there to solve their economic problems by becoming beggars. Although anyone living in Vrindavan somehow or other is benefited, The real Vrindavan is appreciated only by a pure devotee. As stated in Brahma Samhita, Preman Janat Churito Bhakti Vilochanena. When one has purified eyes, he can see that Sri Vrindavan and the original Golok Vrindavan planet in the spiritual sky are identical. Srila Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasa Acharya, Sri Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Sri Bhagavan Das Babaji Maharaj, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, and later Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakur of Calcutta always engaged in Nama Bhajan and certainly did not live anywhere but Vrindavan. Presently, the members of the Hare Krishna movement throughout the world live in materially opulent cities such as London, New York, Los Angeles, Paris, Moscow, Zurich, and Stockholm. However, we are satisfied with following in the footsteps of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other acharyas. Because we live in the temples of Radha Krishna and continuously hold Harinam Sankirtan, the chanting of Hare Krishna, we consequently live in Vrindavan and nowhere else. We are also following in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by attempting to construct a temple in Vrindavan for our disciples throughout the world to visit. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Melitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Swapadantikam. So the first thing that struck me reading this purport was just how personal it is. Prabhupada is addressing the purport not just in general terms about the significance of living in Vrindavan and so forth, but he's addressing it directly to us. He's telling the members of the Hare Krishna movement, our society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we have constructed this for our devotees to visit. And he's kind of doing two things at once. He's offering us all an invitation to come to Vrindavan, to the temple that he's constructed for us to visit. And at the same time, he's assuring us that even if we can't make it, or we can't make it very often, then it's no problem. London, Stockholm, and so forth are all as good as Vrindavan Dham. So, just to backtrack a little bit, Krishna, I have heard, is a person. Right? He's personal. We can know him as a person, and in that way, because of his personal nature, he has likes and he has dislikes. He has things that are his favorite and things that he doesn't prefer so much. This is because he's a person, and that's the nature of people. People have personalities, and personalities means some things you favor and some things you disfavor. So Krishna, he also has his favorite spots, his favorite places. Just like all of us, we have our locations that we like very much because we grew up there or because we used to go and visit regularly or some new place that we've discovered, or maybe it's just a quiet spot somewhere in the forest. Or we have our favorite locations which we go to again and again. So also when Krishna comes to this material world, he has his favorite locations, his places that he really likes to be at. And he comes back to those places over and over and over again. In fact, not only does he come back to those places, but the scriptures say he never actually leaves them. That's how much he likes it. He says, Vrindavanat ekam padam na gachati. The Lord doesn't take one step outside of Vrindavan. This is how dear Vrindavan Dham it is to him. And so therefore, because the Lord specifically favors certain locations out of his own free will, those places are not part of this material world anymore. They gain a special status. They become small pieces of the spiritual world that have been scattered in various places in the material world, making them very special because they function as kind of doorways, as loopholes to the spiritual world. And kind of like Prabhupada used to say, like embassies, right? Where, sometimes you hear stories of international criminals who do some kind of crime or they're spying or something like that, and pretty soon eventually they're caught, and so there's a mad chase through the town. And just at the last minute, just before they're ready to get caught, they jump across the wall of the U.S. Embassy, and whew, they're safe, right? No one can touch them there, or the Indian Embassy, or whatever country they happen to be from. They jump across and they land in that location. And then, of course, the police can do nothing to capture them, because in order to get that person out of there, you'd have to go through these treaties, what do they call them? Extradition treaties that, you know, deal with taking one person out from one country and placing them in another country, which is, of course, a very long and complicated affair. The country in which they found shelter, he's the citizen of that country, and obviously he doesn't want to give them up so easily. And so that's kind of the way Vrindavan Dham functions in this material world. That we spend most of our lives being chased by this material energy everywhere, from place to place to place, and especially in our world today, right? We live in a very mobile society, a mobile world. I know this very much from personal experience, because although the world itself is becoming very mobile in terms of people moving places all the time and traveling and living in different spaces, there is no society as mobile as the United States. And people are forced to move long distances just to find a job, for example, or just to keep their job. The company will transfer them from one place to another. But this is the case now more and more everywhere in the world. If you don't have to move, then you have to travel. And people are constantly going all over the place. So this is material energy, Maya. She's kind of chasing us. We're criminals, and she's chasing us all around this material world. And we have no peace, really. This is generally seen as some sign of advancement. Right? Oh, we can travel all over the world so easily, right? Oh, I'm jetting off to this place, and I'm jetting off. And it's kind of a sense of prestige people who are travelers. Well, I'm going here, and I'm going there, and I'm going here. But from a Vaishnava perspective, this is actually a great pain. It's a great hassle. And it's a sign of lack of peace, of ashanti. Right? There's no peace in life. And so a person cannot be steady in one place and be satisfied there and be happy there, but rather we get chased around everywhere. So in our chase, with Maya chasing us in all different directions, right, if we are, should we be so fortunate as to find ourselves somehow jumping over this wall and landing in Sri Vrindavan Dham, then actually we're safe, right? We've material energy, Maya, she can't capture us there. Right? This is a little piece of the spiritual world found here in the material world. And so Prabodhananda Saraswati, he wrote a book called the Vrindavana Mahimamrita, the nectarian glories of Sri Vrindavan Dham. And he's a Vrindavan fanatic, right? That's kind of the only way one could describe him. Even if the word fanatic is a very light word to use in relation to his mood in regard to Vrindavan Dham. And he says that whether you have to beg or borrow or steal or do anything, somehow get yourself to Vrindavan. If this is this point of, you know, the spy jumping over the wall, right? Whatever you have to do, you might have to run a few red lights and go over the speed limit and break a few laws, but just somehow jump into that embassy, cross that wall, land there. Because if you get there, then everything's taken care of. Right? You're safe. Right? So he says, by hook or by crook, you have to beg, borrow, or steal, somehow land in Sri Vrindavan Dham. He has so many very intense verses. He says, and once I'm there, he said, if anyone were to ask me to leave Vrindavan Dham, it doesn't matter who it might be, right? But if they ask me to leave, I will kill that person. I'll get rid of him. Right? How dare they ask me to leave Sri Vrindavan Dham? And then he goes on, he says, I have no qualifications whatsoever. I'm the most rotten and lowly person in this world. Right? I don't have any knowledge. I don't have any devotion. I don't have any faith. I don't have anything. But somehow I found myself in Vrindavan Dham, and I will do whatever it takes to stay in this place. He says Vrindavan Dham is so merciful. He says Vrindavan is the greatest of all teachers. The greatest of all teachers is Sri Vrindavan Dham. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. The holy Dham we hear is none other than Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram manifests in the form of the holy place, of the Dham, the abode where Krishna incarnates. And Balaram, of course, we know, is the original spiritual master. He's the Adi Guru. And so Prabodhananda Saraswati says that very few people, no one actually, can teach you as well as the holy Dham can. In other words, the holy place is the original spiritual master. And so by living in Vrindavan Dham, we find that our spiritual life becomes intensified, it becomes magnified. Everything that we do, whether it's good or it's bad, we can see it very clearly. And the reaction for that comes back to us in a much more intense fashion. This is like, this is both a blessing, well, it's always a blessing, but it can be both happy and painful. Right? This Vrindavan Dham is the best of teachers, but she's not always an easy teacher. Right? And that's true, the best teachers are not always easy teachers. Sometimes she can be very difficult also. She can teach us very hard lessons, very difficult lessons. It's like these mirrors, you know, sometimes in bathrooms, if you stay in a hotel or something, you have these, besides your regular mirror, you have these mirrors that super magnify your face. Have you seen any of those before? Right? They're very useful because you can see everything clearly. Nice for putting on tilak and stuff. But the problem is it's also very painful because every little blackhead and every little pimple and every little dimple you have and every problem you've got on your face, you can see it like this. And it's very painful to look at your own face because from a distance it looks much nicer than it does way up close, right? So this is what Vrindavan Dham, this is what the holy Dham does. Srimati Radharani or Lord Balaram, they place this magnifying mirror in front of us, right? They stick it in our face. And it's the greatest mercy because we can see things that we never knew we had. We can see problems, we can see anarthas or issues or whatever that we never knew we had. At the same time, it's very difficult, it's very painful, because it's not a pleasant experience seeing our qualities so up close. But it can be also, right? It can be both positive and painful. In that, anything good we have also, any wonderful qualities we have, any sincerity we have, that also is magnified 100-fold. And so we see a reciprocation immediately in our devotional service. Right? We can feel it tangibly and immediately. This is something that many, many devotees who spend time in the holy place will attest to. That while reciprocation or reactions or returns on our activities in devotional service usually take some time to mature, to bear fruit, somehow in Vrindavan or in the holy place, that process becomes accelerated. And we can immediately feel the result of what we do. And in this way, we learn very quickly. We learn very effectively. Often the problem with the learning experience is we do something and then we get the reaction for it, you know, 5 years down the road. And of course, by that time, we have no clue as to why we're getting this reaction. So then we're wondering what's going on. Right? Of course, it's affecting us at some subtle level, of course. But nevertheless, the activity and the reaction are often very separated. But in the holy place, these things become much closer. Right? Everything kind of intensifies, it magnifies. And so we can tangibly feel the Lord's reciprocation in a very intense way. I'll give you one example from my own experience in Vrindavan. When I was doing this 1 month long parikrama, it's called the Vrajamandala parikrama, you spend 1 month going around the entire area of Braj where Krishna performed his pastimes. And it takes a month because every day you walk, say, 20 or 22 kilometers, and then you settle down for the night, set up camp, and the next day you walk again. And you stop at the different places of pilgrimage, that places where Krishna did his pastimes, and you hear Krishna's pastimes by devotees who are very well versed in such things. And I remember, this was, maybe 2004, I had decided that year I was going to do the whole walk barefoot. This is something that not everyone does. The first time I did it, I kind of did it half and half, partially, because it can be very difficult, especially if you're coming from the West, where we live a little pampered in terms of our feet, and things can be difficult. It bites, and there's thorns this long, and there's roads where they actually on purpose make roads that with all the stones with the point up. And the purpose of this is to allow tractors to move more comfortably on the road to the pain of the pilgrims who come there. But of course, to the Brajbasis, it makes no difference. You see these little Brajbasi children, and they're running and tumbling on this horrible surface, and little feet, and very tender also. It's not like they have thick calluses or anything, but somehow it doesn't make any difference, and we're there going, every step is painful. Anyhow, that year I decided, okay, I want to do the entire walk barefoot, okay? And this is didn't really promise, but made this a promise in my own mind, I guess. I was too afraid to actually make a promise to Krishna directly. So I kind of half promised in my mind. But that determination increased as the walk continued. But about a couple weeks through, my feet really started to get very sore. And I was getting these blisters underneath my feet, and they were filling with water, and it was very painful every step. And more and more of Vrindavan, unfortunately, is being paved. There's more roads, and there's more. And so, whereas the first time we did parikrama, we walked mostly in fields and paddy fields. And now when you do parikrama, you spend a lot of time walking on roads, which are, tar or asphalt at best, and these horrible things at worst. So I was walking on one of these roads, and it was black, and it was very hot. They absorbed the heat of the sun. And my skin was already all, peeled off, basically, and these blisters were there, and the feet were like burning, they were like on a stove or something. They were being cooked, and it was getting so painful. And so I was thinking, look, I was trying to explain to myself, don't be be practical, okay? Krishna doesn't ask for some severe austerity. Just be practical. You want to be able to finish this walk. Don't be a fanatic. You've got the slippers in your backpack. Pull them out and wear them. And so I thought, okay, finally, I think I should do it. I shouldn't be impractical. So I pulled the slippers out, started walking. These were these, these Indian type slippers with the this shape like that, the sandals. And within a few minutes, of walking in those slippers, the rubber on the top of them, because I hadn't worn shoes for so long, started to rub on my skin on top of my feet and created these very painful blisters. Within like 15 or 20 minutes, my feet were covered in blisters on the top, right? And now I had blisters on the bottom and on the top. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, this is even more painful than walking without them. But by that time, my mind was just saying, no, look, you gotta be, there was some kind of an odd, weird, upside down determination that, no, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna be practical, I decided that this is what I'm gonna do, and I'm still gonna walk with my slippers, okay? This is what I'm, so I decide, I keep walking. Finally, we come to one little grove of trees where we're going to stop for darshan. And we're all filing into that place. And as I'm walking in, there's this old Brijbasi lady who comes out of nowhere, practically speaking. She just shows up, comes to the along the route, the path, and is watching everyone go by. When I pass her, she stops me, and she said, "What do you think you're doing?" in Hindi. I said, "You come to Vrindavan Dham and you wear shoes here? You wear slippers?" And I couldn't believe it. I was like, There were devotees in front of me and behind me. In fact, most of the party were wearing some kind of shoes. Many of them were wearing like full-on tennis shoes or sneakers, you know, like these thick ones with air rubber soles and stuff like that to help their walking. And I think, me? I'm just wearing these simple, you know, Indian tile slippers. And she for like 5 minutes, she like told me off. What are you doing? This is terrible. And who do you think you are? And how can you come? This is Krishna's own home. Would you walk in your home with shoes on? You probably wouldn't, right? So why do you come to Krishna's home and you walk like this? And oh my God, I thought, oh Krishna, it's like Krishna Radharani directly coming and saying, you made a vow, now stick to it, right? Do it. Give this up. Stop being practical. Give off your shoes. And it was just such an immediate, when I didn't get the message the first time, when I started getting blisters on top of my feet, then it's like Krishna sent someone to tell me that this is not what you're supposed to be doing. Take those shoes off, right? And everyone else went by her, walking peacefully, right? Without being stopped at all. She didn't chastise anyone else there. Only me, right? So anyway, so many times in Vrindavan, you feel this direct reciprocation from Krishna. And the quality of Vrindavan Dham is that it comes, that reciprocation comes even to those who are neophyte, even to those who are just starting in spiritual life. And this is why it's called one of the five most potent forms of devotional service. Because normally, this kind of immediate or personal reciprocation, one would expect of a person when they reach a certain level of advancement. They can see the deities and they can hear Krishna speaking to them, and Krishna will reciprocate in ways that are very personal and so forth. But in Vrindavan, anyone can experience that reciprocation. And this is why Rupa Goswami says that these five forms of devotional service are so potent that even a neophyte can come to the level of ecstatic devotion just by a little attachment to any one of these five. So that's the nature of the Holy Dham, or that's the nature of Vrindavan. And therefore, Vaishnavas all over the world and throughout history have yearned to spend time in Vrindavan, have hankered to be there. We know of Srila Prabhupada's beautiful poem that he wrote on the Jaladuta, in which he expressed his great separation that he was feeling from Vrindavan Dham and his lordship Sri Sri Madan Mohan Govinda and Gopinath. Right. So devotees everywhere, they hanker for this, for Vrajavas, right, residence in Vrindavan Dham. And we sing this every morning also, with the hope or the desire of, with the intention of creating that desire in ourselves as well. Radha Krishna Seva Pao Eya Bhilashi Je Tumara Saran Loi Tara Vancha Purna Hoi Kripa Kori Koro Tare Vrindavana Vasi. Please be merciful to me and make me a resident of Vrindavan. Vrindavana Vasi. It's actually a very esoteric, very advanced song that we sing every morning. Eni Vedana Dharo Shakira Nugato Koro Seva Adhikaro Diya Koro Nijama. Make me a follower in the footsteps of the Sakhis, of the Gopis, and make me your own maidservant. So, devotees always desire this. They hanker for this type of Brajavas, residence in Vrindavan. And it is said that there's three ways to achieve residence in Vrindavan Dham. Three ways to be a Brajavasi, basically. One is to take birth in Vrindavan. Those who take birth in Vrindavan are very fortunate. They're members of Krishna's own family and have a very special place in his life. The second is to spend your days in Vrindavan, to live there for many years. And the third is to die in Vrindavan. And of course, the place of our birth, well, none of us have control over that. That's already been done, and it's wherever it is. For most of us, it's probably not Vrindavan Dham. But the other two are still accessible to us, living our years in Vrindavan and leaving our body in Vrindavan Dham. Now, there's a final point I want to make in this regard, and this is how do we practically live in Vrindavan Dham? And this is what Prabhupada is talking about throughout this purport. He's kind of mixing it in, this telling us to go settle in Vrindavan, but at the same time saying, what is Vrindavan? Right? And Gadadhar Goswami, Gadadhar Pandit is telling Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wherever you are, that place is Vrindavan Dham. So, Prabhupada is saying here, any situation which is imbued with Harinam, with the presence of the Lord's holy name, with devotees who are sincerely engaged in chanting the Lord's glories. In other words, with the other four potent types of devotional service. The holy name, the worship of the deity, service to the devotee, study of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Wherever these activities go on, in the association of devotees, right, that place is as good as Vrindavan Dham. And so living in that place and dying in that place is as good as living and dying in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada himself, he left this world in Vrindavan Dham. But he certainly didn't have to. Till the very end, he expressed a desire, he would say, to die fighting in the field like a soldier. Right? He said, I want to die on the battlefield, not here in Vrindavan. And even at the last, in the last months, practically speaking, when he felt a little better, he made that trip to London, and even after that, he would get an urge, let me go out and travel. Right? Well, so what if I die on the way? Or so what if I die there? It's okay. It's better to die in the field. And we have since then many wonderful examples of devotees like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj and others who spent their last days in the places of pilgrimage, in the holy places created by Srila Prabhupada, by his kind mercy. These holy places come outside of India, and they manifest there. Those embassies kind of spread find themselves all over the world. And we can take advantage of Vrindavan. In Europe, we can take advantage of Vrindavan in North America, and so forth. Right. So Srila Prabhupada, in that way, because he carries Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his own heart, right? And wherever Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, that place is Vrindavan. And therefore, wherever the devotee is, that place also becomes Vrindavan Dham. Tirthi kurvanti tirthani, the Bhagavatam says. You, addressing the saintly person, make the place, you are place of pilgrimage personified. And you make the places of pilgrimage holy. You are the reason why Vrindavan Dham still exists, is because there are devotees of the Lord who still live there. Otherwise, there would be no need for Vrindavan. So I'll stop there because we are already over time. Thank you all very much for your attention. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.